Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Today's guest is the one show presenter, the only one show presenter. Not the only one, but it's called the one show, so she is the one today. It's Alex Jones.
Hello, how
Hello.
Are you?
I'm well, good.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. Thank you for coming on.
Well, no problem. I've been listening to these podcasts. I absolutely love them.
Last
night, emptying the dishwasher, listening to you and Davina.
I love it. That's about actually my guilty pleasure when it comes to podcasts. I'll do the washing up tonight, dear.
I know. It just gives you a bit of me time, actually.
It does. Doesn't it?
Close the kitchen door. Happy as Larry. Gin and tonic, empty dishwasher, podcast on.
Well, I always feel that it's like that adult conversation. You feel like you've had that little bit of adult interaction, even though you've not actually said anything.
Absolutely. That's exactly how I felt last night. It was like a break. It was like, oh, this is really good. And hearing two women talk about things, I was like, yes, yes, and me, yes, yes.
And that's the great thing, I think, opening that conversation about motherhood. So many of us have felt so many things that we're maybe too ashamed to share or don't want to share. And then actually when we share it, everyone kind of goes, oh yeah, me too. Or I've had a degree of that. And you suddenly don't feel so alone.
Oh my God, completely. There were so many things that you touched upon in the podcast I listened to last night. And so many issues. I thought, God, that was me. And I thought, you know, I couldn't say that. I think Davina said at one point, you know, or maybe it was you actually who said, you know, there were times right at the beginning you think, what have I done?
Yeah.
You know, oh God, is this going to go on? And I remember actually about week three of having Teddy, closing the bathroom door. Mum had taken him for a little while. She said, go and have a shower. And I thought, when is this going to end? As in, you know, when do the sleepless nights start? And then I realised, not probably until he's about 18 plus, you know, it's that realisation that you're in this for the long haul. I mean, forever.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, yeah, it was things like that that you said on the one I listened to last night that I thought, God, that's amazing. Because so many people, you feel like you have to say, God, this is amazing. Isn't this amazing?
Yeah.
Oh, it's going so well. Oh, it's a dream. And actually, it's not in the early days. It's really hard.
I actually liken those first 3 weeks to hell. And I know that's not what a lot of people want to hear, but I really think it's the most difficult thing. It was very different when Buddy came along for me, actually. Second child, I felt much more settled into it. But first time round, geez, that was hard.
It was really hard. I mean, it's because, you know, like everybody knows, you don't have a manual, you don't know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's because I think you feel that you should be elated.
Yeah.
And you're not elated.
Well, and it's something you've wanted for a very long time.
Yeah, and it's all the things like, you know, nobody said how difficult breastfeeding would be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody literally mentioned it. And I was like, am I the only one?
What, you mean Teddy didn't just sniff out the boob? I mean, what is this? But,
I mean, I was waiting for the magic. I was waiting for the moment you put them on your chest, they snuffle around and it all happens. And I was like, my nipples are bleeding.
Oh.
This is not like they said it would be.
No.
And you know, but nobody really mentioned that it might not go to plan.
Yeah.
And, you know, since then, obviously then, because you're in this club and then you talk to other mothers and they go, yeah, and me. Yeah. It's really hard, isn't it, for the first about 3 to 6 weeks. It's really, I was like, yeah, it is. You know, Vaseline on the nipples, ibuprofen and paracetamol keeping you going. It was like, oh, when is this going to stop?
Well, I had a friend of mine text me literally after I'd, just before I'd given birth. And she said something like, just remember, when you're feeding, I always find it useful to kick my legs back into the chair and really tense my buttocks, and that gets me through that first little bit. And I was like, what is she talking about?
But now we know.
Oh, gosh. I was like clenching my toes, clenching my feet, fists, everything.
Yeah. And you're like, OK, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. He's going on. OK, sit still. Oh, no, I haven't got the remote. I'm not moving for an hour because it hurts.
But it's amazing the amount of things you can do while breastfeeding, I always found.
Amazing. If you have everything around you, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest mistake is when you go, oh, no, I haven't got a glass of water. And you're really thirsty, aren't you, in that first sort of 6-8 weeks. Then you haven't got your phone or you haven't got the remote. Oh. If you've got the stuff, you're fine.
Yeah.
You know, you can go for an hour. But if not, an hour seems like a day. Looking at the wall, just thinking, come on, finish feeding.
Yeah, I had exactly the same with Buzz, to be honest. And he took forever to feed. Because he was a small baby, he just took forever.
I mean, people say, 20 minutes. Oh, well, one midwife said 20 minutes on each side. I was like, what? More like 45 on each side?
Yes, exactly the same.
Or not even each side, because sometimes then you'd get bored and fall asleep. I mean, there was no pattern to it at all. A friend of mine who actually had a good time breastfeeding, and of course some people do.
Yes.
And it's not hellish for everybody. She said, Al, you need to wear a hair bobble on your wrist and then you switch it back and forth so you know. I was like, what do I need that for? I mean, it's so unpredictable. It just any boob, anything is a bonus.
Yeah. I mean, I used to write notes down. Hair bubbles, I used to just forget to switch them over.
Yeah.
Then you'd always just end up feeling your boobs. One would always be rock hard.
Oh, and one would be like an empty sack.
Yes.
A nice look, isn't it?
Under a T-shirt. Still rocking it. So you have written a book called
Winging It. Yes.
What made you want to write the book?
Well, I mean, I had no intention of writing a book at all. In the beginning.
And actually, I love the opening where you say that the tweet went out that you'd written a book and the comments.
And here we go,
tippy-tappy.
Yeah. And the thing is, I mean, I don't know anything about being a parent, as any of us do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a baby arrived and it's like having a new job that you've never done before. Yeah. And so it was more kind of therapy. I'll be honest, it's therapy for me. I mean, I wrote it in the thick of it, in the eye of the storm, during the first. I started, I think, when Ted was about 4 months. And so reading it back now, I mean, it scares me because it feels so real and so in the moment. And it's probably a lot of oversharing. But it was kind of, therapeutic to just get it out. And I know you understand that. But it was kind of the things were happening at that time. I was feeding at that time.
Yeah.
You know, and I was trying to go back to work when I started writing it. And so what the book is, I guess, is, I mean, it's not a manual or a help book because I have no tips. I have no wisdom whatsoever. But I think what it is just kind of like we chatter now. Mm. It's a kind of, do you get this? Do you feel like this? Isn't this rubbish? Isn't this great? Isn't this rubbish? Great rubbish, great rubbish. You know, it's that journey of the first year that actually is the best journey ever, but it's one of the, well, it is the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah, well, I think we're all so hard, we find it so hard to say anything other than it's great. It's the most amazing thing. Because it is that, it's like you
feel
deserve it then to be a mum.
And of course it is the best thing ever. Yeah. There's no two ways about that. And I'm sure, as everybody says, you know, the older they get, the better it gets. Mm. And you believe that because it is at the beginning. I mean, the first few weeks are purgatory. And then it gets better. And by the time they're 6 months, you think, gosh, this is a lot easier. And now that, I mean, Ted is coming up to 40 months, it's a lot easier. And it's a lovely age. And he's starting to walk, you know, like a little drunk person. And he's starting to kind of, you know, form words. And it's amazing. But, you know, there are those issues that I think, you know, it's not just about being a mother anymore. That's sort of not enough. You're expected to do so much more and you're expected to keep a career going and all of this. And I suppose what the book does is kind of like a support group. It's like, come on, let's chat about this. Let's see how difficult this is and how we manage it. Should we have to manage it? You know, it's all those questions that you spend sleepless nights when your baby's sleeping. You still can't sleep because you think, okay, tomorrow, how am I going to get out of the house at 6:30 and get him up? How am I going to do all this now? You know, it's like this morning for both of us. We're both here, somehow dressed and fine. But it's all those things, isn't it? Those sleepless nights you kind of go through thinking, I don't know how I'm going to get through everything that needs to be done tomorrow.
It's all organising, isn't it?
Oh, well, And I mean, I am disorganised by... Naturally, I'm disorganised. But I've learnt that the key to this is kind of systems in place, lists, organisation, teamwork. So, I mean, I don't even recognise the person I am now compared to the person I was 2 years ago.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy. But, you know, you do. Because you've got this most important little human, you change and you adapt and you become the best form of yourself that you can be, I think.
What sort of mum did you think you were going to be growing up? Because I read in the book that you thought that at 25 you'd be married and have children.
Yeah, I thought we'd be well on the way to maybe number three now. But that's not how it worked out. And I think that's the other thing, you know. Society's kind of changed, hasn't it? And we're all, because of the pressures on us, we're all doing things a little bit later.
Yep.
And that is sometimes because we haven't met the right person. It's because we are having babies later. And so, you know, things like my sister suffered with PCOS really badly and she didn't think she could have children. And then thankfully she's gone on to have two, which is brilliant. But there's also, there's loads of different stuff that it just felt like my mum didn't have.
Yeah.
You know, that they went to school, they met, they got married, they started having children a lot younger.
Mm.
And life wasn't more straightforward for them, but it was different.
Yeah.
You know, family.
Well, there's that interesting section in the book where you sort of compare with your mum.
Yeah.
Like, who, what are the pros and cons? Who had it easier? Who's found it tougher? And actually, it's hard.
It's, yeah, you come out of it thinking, actually, it's as tough for both generations, but it's tough in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't, you know, mum says herself, she said, I don't know how you're doing this with working and all the rest of it. But, you know, for her, she was at home with us until we were, I think I was probably five and my sister was three. Or actually, we might have been a bit older.
Mm.
And she said, that was tough. I had, you know, I was just at home as a 24-year-old with you girls. I had no idea. And it was really, really tough.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's an answer in there, but I think it's just about being supportive of each other, whatever the situation.
Yeah.
You know, just going, well, that's your choice. You're nailing it. Well done.
Because a lot of the book I found in the early chapters is targeted a lot at that older mum.
Yeah.
And it's obviously something that's played in your mind a lot, because it wouldn't even cross my mind at what age is mums, you know, women have children. But then towards the end, I think, after Teddy actually arrives, you're like, actually, we're just all in this together. And so it's really interesting as someone reading the book, really actually seeing that transition in you, having that focus on, I'm an older mum and I'm old, you know, I've got all these things and this is what's happening to me and it's going to be tough because of this. And actually at the end, you're kind of like, actually, we're all of this. It doesn't matter what your job is, how old you are.
No, it doesn't matter. We're all the same. And actually, I think, you know, being a mum and having a baby is the one thing that's a leveller for us all, isn't it? It doesn't matter whether you're the queen, you know, whether you're a 16-year-old who's having a baby. It doesn't matter, actually. We are all having the same experience.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It grounds us all and it brings us in a brilliant way together.
Mm.
I mean, I love being a mum because it's widened my circle of friends so much. Because suddenly you have this empathy with women that you didn't have before.
Well, and you just feel like you can talk to anyone.
Oh, anyone. Yeah. Because we're all having the same issues on a daily basis. And that's, I think, one of the best things about becoming a parent.
Mm.
And for Charlie as well, you know, not just mums, for dads as well. I think, you know, for him, he said, oh, isn't it brilliant, Al, that suddenly you feel like you're part of this new club. Where everybody's kind of got each other's back.
Yeah.
And that's a really nice feeling, you know, and it's a special thing, isn't it? Everybody understands the trial and tribulations. You kind of, it's shorthand. You don't even really need full sentences. You just go, oh, I didn't sleep last night, dot, dot, dot. And everybody knows what that means.
Yeah. And it is, I think it doesn't matter if that support is from a message, a group of messages from friends, like, you know, we all have like different mum groups where we're all in different chats.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if that's actually meeting up, because I find meeting up really difficult because of work schedules and stuff. Or if it's just a stranger in the street. Like, I remember being, we were in a restaurant with Buddy, both boys, but Buddy would just not settle. He was going absolutely berserk. I remember taking him outside and he was tired because we were abroad and he was probably just jet lagged. And I just, you know, when you're trying to go through that meltdown and trying to see what was wrong and nothing's working. So I was just taking him outside, trying to see him see something new. And this mum turned to me when she was walking past and she was like, it will pass, you'll get through it. And just having that mum said that, and she just said that and she just walked off. But it literally just, I just burst into tears and I was like, yeah, it absolutely will.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
thank you for reminding me and taking me out of this moment that it's so easy to get lost in.
Oh, it's so easy. And you do feel alone, even though you know there are trillions of people doing the same as you. But and it's brilliant. I mean, the best thing I did was join an NCT group.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. They have been saviours.
Really?
You know, right at the beginning, especially, and now I look back at our WhatsApp thread, and it's cliche, isn't it? You go to an NCT group and then you start a WhatsApp group and then you start meeting for coffees, and yeah, you do. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, and I think cliches are cliches for a reason.
Yeah, and it saves you from yourself in those early days, especially. I mean, they have been just brilliant. And I look back at our WhatsApp feed and it's just lovely, you know, going back right to the beginning when we were all in the early stages, sort of 2 weeks in, maybe going, oh my God, I can't feed, or, you know, I've got mastitis, or I've got thrush, or, you know, we went to hospital last night, and it's all 4 a.m., 5 a.m., you know, and there was always somebody there at the end of the phone, so to speak, you know, when you feel in those lonely nights like there's nobody else, you know. Mm-hmm. Charlie sometimes had fallen asleep because he was working, and I wouldn't wake him because, you know, I mean, we did the whole thing. We slept in the same room. There was never any spare bed for him. I don't know whether that was right, actually. Maybe next time, if there is a next time, touch wood, we might consider. Because I was kind of being really quiet and trying not to wake him, where actually it would have been better to just switch the telly on.
Yeah.
You know. But what kept me sane was being able to pick my phone up and see all the other girls who were up as well. And, you know, just having a chat. And I mean, yeah, for me, NCT was the best money spent.
I love in the book you say that one of the ladies there, like, she literally started with, "I'm not here to make friends."
Oh, hilarious. I mean, opening gambit. I don't need any new friends. I don't want any new friends. Within, I mean, a week, she was like, "Should we set up a WhatsApp group?"
Oh, the change. But that's the thing, isn't it? So many friends, you all go through different stages of life at different times. There's no, you can't really all guarantee that you'll all be going through the same stage.
No.
You meet people, you know. And so it's, and you do need that other group that are just there.
Yeah, and it was weird because I think my friends who have been the same friends through uni, you know, they live in Cardiff, they kind of thought, oh, this is a bit weird. It's like she's got new friends.
Oh.
And I was trying to explain, they will never be you.
Yeah.
But I think everybody, you know, we all have loads of friends, like school friends, uni friends, you know, and it's really hard, I think, to catch up with everybody.
Yeah.
Especially when children come along. And you do find that you need sort of a new group of friends.
Mm.
Because it's people who are in that moment at the same time, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, even friends who have children who are maybe 2-3 years older, it's not quite the same.
No.
You just need that group that are really in it, in the eye of the storm at the same time, and can empathise at any time of day. You know, and for me, that's what this group gave me. I mean, they're brilliant.
Did you go to many baby groups after, you know, once the...
Yeah, we did kind of baby massage, which was lovely. Even after sort of week four, Ted was looking at me as if to say, oh, this again. Okay, I'll lie for a bit, and then in a bit, I'm going to roll and I'm not going to like it anymore. And our sort of window got shorter every week.
Right.
He really liked the first one. But I mean, even classes like that, because NCT, I suppose, it is considered, you know, a bit pricey. Although there are reductions, I think. But, you know, baby classes like that are brilliant as well. It's just about being able to sit down and have somebody who understands and is going through, and you just chat.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like free therapy.
It is, and I totally missed the point of them at the start, because I was like, I'm going to go to four. Buzz was 10 weeks old, and I decided to go to four a week. That
four
was just
a week.
Too much. It was too much.
Oh, punchy.
But I'd spend the whole time just worrying that he was going to cry and not thinking about this bond that I was meant to be creating. I felt that there was so much pressure that I put on myself. It wasn't from anyone else. And actually, it's only when I kind of cut down to two and relaxed as being a mum, and like into being a mum as well, that actually you realise that it's not really for the baby that you're there. I mean, it's great. They get to play, like, have some songs sung to them and
but they
some
don't
things
really
shaking
know.
In their faces. But they don't know. And actually, for you to have that support from other mums, that's what you're there for.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's for the parents, really, isn't it? But I mean, I remember, you know, you were saying about four classes. That is really brave, because at the beginning, just trying to get out of the house... I mean, I'd really sort of panic and think, okay, the bag's packed. Okay, he's in. He's in a snowsuit. He's in the pram. Okay, and that was like a mission in itself, yeah, wasn't it? And then you'd think, oh, how is this going to go now? And I remember one day going to Sainsbury's, and basically that was my daily thing, going to Sainsbury's. I mean, I still do it. I'm in there all the time. Other supermarkets are also available, obviously. And he just had, you know, as babies do, a little meltdown, and sort of bored of being in the pram, you know, mm-hmm, lying down, and was screaming going down the aisles. And I was sort of carrying him in my arms, trying to comfort him, pushing the pram, trying to sort of put the groceries in the pram, you know. And this lady turned to me at the checkout and said, I think you need to do something. He's obviously really hungry or something.
Ugh.
And I thought, what a shame that, you know, you're another woman and obviously this baby's tiny and new and I look bedraggled and stressed, and that, you know, instead of saying, oh God, you know, isn't he cute, or, you know, it'll be better, just walk him around a bit, or yeah, something, some words of encouragement. But instead she was really quite snipey, and I left the shop in there and just
did
left
you?
The shop, and I was in floods of tears because it's exactly what I'd worried about before leaving, yeah, the house, you know. And every time I see somebody in that situation, I make a concerted effort to just give them a nice, warm smile and kind, yeah, of try and, you know, make them feel as if, yeah, we've all been there. It will get better. Or, you
so
know,
funny, with just that look, with just a look, it can say so much.
So much. And but it is funny how some people still have little patience for crying babies and little empathy for new mothers. And yeah, that is awful. Because you feel out of your depth.
Did you feel an extra pressure because you are in the public eye? And did you feel like when you went out, people knew that it was you and, you know, that people would be watching or not?
I don't think I did, just because I suppose it's so all-consuming.
Yeah.
I just didn't even have time to contemplate, you know. And I'm, you know, I'm very much, I go and do my job, but when I'm at home, I'm, you know, I'm just me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, when you've got a small baby, all of that kind of disappears because you just go, I can only just get us both out, get us both dressed, go and do what we need to do. And the same in baby classes, you know, I didn't think about it. Mm. And actually the girls in the NCT class, I mean, it's like the United Nations. We're from all different parts of the world.
Yeah.
And it's so lovely because none of us have parental support in London. Hence, I think, why the group became so important to us all, because mm-hmm, all of our parents were living far away. And they had no idea what I did, which was lovely. And I remember Sarah, who was our NCT teacher, she said when we first arrived, I want you all to tell us what your names are, where you're having the baby, how many weeks pregnant you are, but I don't want anybody to mention what they do for a living.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and it was great because suddenly that wasn't even in the question.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. And I was grateful to her because yeah, I knew, I'd known Sarah before, and I knew she'd also done it for a bit for my benefit. And it was just great because then there was, you know, nobody talked about it.
Mm.
And now the girls just think it's funny. They're just like, oh, I'm not sure about that dress tonight. Oh, love your top tonight. You know, they yeah. But I think, you know, for me, mum first, job secondary, it's two very different roles.
Yeah. Talking about work, did you find it difficult having a baby and leaving and then coming back?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. And I think as thrilled I was to fall pregnant, you know, as we got closer to my maternity leave, I did really worry. And that's not something that people like to admit either.
Yeah.
You know, they like to think that, oh, well, I'm going on maternity leave. Everything's great. And so, you know, I shouldn't feel anxious about leaving my job. But I did. I mean, I felt a bit sick thinking about, you know, it's a fickle world that we work in.
Yeah.
And I did feel a bit sick about somebody else doing my job. And the reason is because I've got a lot of respect for the job I do. I like the job I do. And I was worried that somebody else would do it better. You know, and that's, I think, is just the honest truth. I mean, you know, yeah, of course I was excited about going on maternity, but I also did think, oh my goodness, I'm going to be gone for 3 months, which by the way, wasn't enough in the end. And I mean, I don't even know why I promised.
You don't know though, do you? Before you have a baby,
no.
You don't know how long you need off. And you don't, because every baby's different, so you can't possibly predict how much time.
Oh my goodness, no. And so I'd made these sort of promises to be back in, you know, 3 months without, as you say, without realising that that was completely unrealistic. But anyway, for me, before I went off, 3 months, sorry, seemed like a lifetime.
Mm.
You know, I was like, oh my God, that's a long time. But then when it came to it, I mean, obviously, I didn't care in the moment. You know, I was so busy trying to get to grips with becoming a mum that, you know, the job, of course, you know, it was still there and I knew, you know, I would go back, but it lost its importance,
yeah.
You know, for a little while there, because it was all consuming, of course.
Yeah.
Being a mother. So, but I did worry. I did. You know, it's a hard thing, isn't it? When, you know, you're hitting your career stride in your 30s and then, you know, biology dictates that we have to take time out. And it's not something that men have to deal with. It is a difficult thing.
Yeah.
And also, you know, situations have changed. Like, you know, I'm the main breadwinner in our family, as many of my friends are. And so, you know, that raises its own questions. It's tough.
Mm.
So, you know, for me, I did worry and I did go back and I went back too soon.
Because, really?
Yeah, too soon. You know, oh God, I was still trying to feed when I went back to work. So after the meeting, I'd try and express and then, you know, go into the rehearsal and then I'd come back and try and express a little bit more. And then my milk was in the fridge with...
I with know all, this well.
with all the food and sandwiches that were being given to the guests. And it's just like, oh, this is not working. This is a nightmare. And, you know, I'd sit on the sofa and, you know, the titles would start playing and I'd feel this kind of stain come through the dress. And I think, oh no, this is awful. I'm on, you know...
Did that ever happen?
Yeah.
Did it?
Yeah. And what can you do? You know, all I thought was, I really hope that people, you know, the clever people out there will understand what's happened here.
Yeah.
And of course, you can imagine, there were some comments that, oh, were really upsetting to read. There was nothing I could do about it. But yeah, I mean, it destroyed my confidence in terms of trying to feed and be back at work. And so by 4 months, I had to give it up and you know, switch to formula completely. I was combining, but it just wasn't working.
It's so hard because I think when you are working and you're trying to, you literally have such a relationship with your expressing machine, with your pump.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
That noise will never leave.
Just sit there feeling like a cow for
and
like
Charlie would sort of, Charlie would casually turn the telly up. Because I couldn't hear it over the whirring of this lovely machine. It's horrible, isn't it? I mean, you know, you sit there attached to this thing and you just think, well, this is a new low. This is, and then the worst is when you knock over the bottle of expressed milk.
Oh, you just want to cry, damn it.
Oh, just want to cry.
So much. Don't cry with spilt milk. No, do.
No, do.
Do if it's breast milk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, dear. I mean, that juggle... Because you don't even think about that, the juggle of work, but the actual juggle of breastfeeding and working as well.
Oh, I thought, you know, but I think, like lots of people, maybe I'd put a lot of pressure on myself when actually, you know, Teddy thrived just as well on formula as he did on breast milk. I mean, yes, it's the best thing, but it's not the best thing, I don't think, if it puts so much stress on the mother that it's causing... And happiness on both fronts.
Happy
hence,
mum, happy baby.
Happy mum, happy baby.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, at the beginning, you don't know this, do you? You think, oh, God, I just need to do the best for him. I just need to find a way to make this work. And actually, it just wasn't feasible. And that night when I kicked over a bottle of expressed milk, having sat there for probably 40 minutes, you know, and it was still only half full, it was as if the world was going to end. And Charlie just grabbed the car keys. He didn't say anything. And he went to the petrol station down the road, which has a little supermarket bit, and came back with a small bottle of Aptamil.
Yeah.
And initially I said, oh, what's that? We don't need that. And he said, Al, it's just in the cupboard. So it's there in case. And it was actually the kindest thing he could have done because then the pressure was off. And slowly we just sort of started introducing formula, and with less pressure, everything was easier for a while. But then when I went back to work sort of 3-4 days a week, it was impossible.
Yeah.
You know, I just realised, I can't do it.
How about the feeling of someone else being with Teddy? Because that was always a massive thing for me when I was at home writing, and, you know, I'd get a picture ping through of Buzz in a shopping trolley for the first time. I never knew that was a thing until the picture came through, and suddenly I was like, that should have been me.
Exactly. I mean, the first time that I left Ted with Jess, who's a brilliant girl who still looks after him, and we couldn't do without. I mean, it would be easier to divorce Charlie than to get rid of Jess. I mean, that is the truth. She's wonderful in so many ways and we love her. However, there is still that feeling that I want to be doing the things that she's doing with Teddy, and it's really tough. You know, and as you say, the picture will come through. And I remember the one where he had crawled for the first time and she sent a video. And of course, Jess, because she's very close to him and, you know, part of the family. And she sent it to Charlie and I saying, look, guys, you know, Ted has just taken sort of a few little steps crawling. And both of us were just, oh, crestfallen. Aww. Because you think, I wanted to see it.
Yeah.
But actually, it's a reality that all parents face, isn't
Absolutely.
It? You know, you can't be there 24 hours a day. And so, yeah, unfortunately, you know, and as you say, it's the fun things, it's the little things that, you know, going shopping and being in the trolley for the first time, or going to the aquarium for the first time, or going to a zoo for the first time. And you sort of want to say, we would like to be doing that stuff.
Yeah.
But then obviously they need to have a week of activities when you're not around.
Exactly. They suggest, no, don't do anything with him, actually.
Don't do anything.
We've not done that yet.
Just stay in the kitchen until, and then at the weekend, we'll do a massive list of all these things that, you know, you would do with him in the week. It's very hard to manage, but I don't think that gets easier. I think all you can hope for is finding somebody that you trust implicitly that can become sort of a third parent and who you know loves your child nearly as much as you do. That's all you can hope for. Yeah. And then you have to, I suppose, just think, my child is with somebody who literally thinks the world of them, who's going to have a great time, he's going to have a great time, and crack on. Because that is the situation we're all in, isn't it? You know, yeah, we'd love to be at home, but it's just not possible.
No.
But it is still very, very hard.
It is.
To be honest, it's only my mum and dad and Charlie's parents that I'm really happy with. And they can do anything. I mean, mum and dad went to buy him his first pair of shoes. And I was like, I was going to do that. But actually, because it's grandparents, it's kind of okay.
Yeah. And it comes across in the book that you and your parents are really, really close.
Oh, yeah, very close.
I love it. They're talking about the delivery room. That really cracked me up.
Honestly, it was like an episode of Gavin and Stacey.
So they'd followed you to the hospital, hadn't they?
So this is classic mum and dad Jones. So we were in the house and obviously went to the hospital. It was a Saturday night. Gary Baller was on the telly. They were eating spaghetti bolognese. And so mum said, right, these contractions, they're coming out every minute and a half. You do need to go.
Yeah.
But I hate hospitals, so I was really putting it off.
Yeah.
And she said, literally, I'm going to drive you there myself. Charlie, get the coats. You are going now. Anyway, so off we went. They waved us goodbye. Good luck, you know. Let us know when something happens. So we went to the Queen Charlotte Hospital in London. We were in the birth centre and we'd just been shown into kind of the delivery room. And the midwife said, are your parents here? I said, no. We've just said goodbye to them. She said, well, there's two Welsh people in the waiting room.
They can only belong to you.
I was like, oh, no. And then in they come with a flask. With a flask and with kind of a sort of an overnight case. And I was just like, what are you doing? They were like, well, we thought we might as well. We just put a couple of bits in a bag and we've just followed you.
Oh, bless them.
And so there was this awful moment where I was bent over the, you know, the water bath. really in the throes of bad contractions, 7 centimetres dilated. And Dad was hanging our coats up in the wardrobe. And Mum was arranging sort of little nappies and wipes on the changing table. And then I just turned and went, listen, only one of you. I don't care which one, but not three of you. So it's either Charlie, Mum or Dad. But somebody needs to say, and two people need to go. And they were like, oh, okay then. And Dad was feeling really nervous and awkward at this point. Because, bless. I mean, he could, you know.
It's his daughter.
His daughter, who's behaving like a female gorilla at this point, kind of running around and making all sorts of weird noises. And I could tell he wasn't in his comfort zone with Dad. So Dad's like, well, I'll definitely go out. I'll go and see whether there's
I'll come with the team. I'll leave.
And so Mum went with him in the end. But it's sort of her and Charlie tag team then, which worked out perfectly. But they are hilarious. I mean, I should have known, really, that they would definitely follow us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And actually, I had this big thing that I didn't want Teddy to be born into a chaotic environment.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but I was hell-bent on not making those screaming noises I'd seen and, you know, one born every minute being case in point. And I thought, right, I'm going to try my best to be calm and welcome him. I mean, what am I talking about?
Welcome.
I'm not even Mother Earth at all. But you kind of get taken over by these weird thoughts.
Yeah.
I'm going to welcome him and it's going to be calm and I'm going to be, you know, ready. And anyway, it turns out that I don't think I did swear in the end or scream because I was just telling myself, no, this is not happening. And he was born into quite a calm environment, quiet.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, all I could think about when, you know, he's crowning, that's awful.
Yeah.
I mean,
the ring of fire.
Ring of fire and more. But then they sort of slip out, don't they?
Yeah,
after that
bit, slip out.
And I had the theme tune of Countryfile in my head. Which was really bizarre. I know. And I didn't even know that I knew the theme tune before that. But the midwife said,
of all the things
you're singing
Countryfile.
Matt Baker was thrilled.
Thinking of him, are you giving that? Or at least his show.
Oh, God. So, yeah. But, I mean, he did. And then he was a very calm baby. Yeah. And I mean, I like to think that that's the one thing maybe I did do right. You know, I sort of tried to keep calm and he did was, I mean, touch wood, pretty easy. Things have changed since then.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was kind of on the quiet, a bit smug, thinking, well, he sleeps quite well.
He's a fan of Countryfile.
I mean, yeah, it's all good, this. I mean, he's really calm. And then he turned one and...
Really? Has it completely changed since then?
Well, he was a sleeper and now he doesn't like sleep.
Oh. You just think you've got it. When they start sleeping, then it's not going to change.
I know. And before, honestly, the fire alarm used to go off when I was mainly cooking because I'm such a bad cook. But not even the fire alarm would rouse him. And now, I mean, we like Matrix going up the stairs, avoiding the creaky floorboards. We know which ones creak.
Yeah.
You know, brushing teeth with just turning the tap on a tiny bit to get the water. You know, never let the tap run because that will wake him. And it's completely changed. And every time, as you say, you think, I've got this, we know what's going on. Suddenly, bombshell.
Yeah.
And you're back to square one again.
Don't you find it, well, I do, I find it more difficult waking up with sort of a toddler than I did with a newborn.
Yeah.
With a newborn, you're kind of in that stage. Everything's everywhere. You kind of muddle through that fog.
Yeah. And also they can't move.
Yeah.
Which is ideal. I mean, now, you know, I'm really bad because I forget to close the stair gate.
Right.
And the Tedster is through a stair gate. I mean,
really?
Literally, he knows that you have to lift to
I'm
open.
Free.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just waiting for the day where he actually just hurdles over them. But now the mornings are chaotic.
Really?
Because, well, I mean, like you say, I mean, they're just everywhere, you know, and I keep tidying up. I'm like, okay, let's tidy up, and then everything's just out again. There's cereal everywhere. And I mean, why did we renovate a house before having a baby? That was a mistake.
Well, in hindsight, have you done stuff in your renovation that you wouldn't have done?
Oh, loads.
No, yeah.
We were renovating for a couple without a child, it turns out.
Yeah. Like most people do.
I mean, what were we thinking? You know, Mum did say, look, I mean, I'm not sure, Al, about that light-coloured carpet.
Oh, no.
But when I was pregnant, I only thought about Ted as a little newborn baby.
Yeah.
I didn't think ahead stupidly. I didn't think about Thomas the Tank Engine being banged relentlessly into new kitchen units.
Yeah.
Or into a fridge freezer that has now has beautiful dents in it.
Beautiful dents, though.
Beautiful dents.
Yeah, artistic.
Ah, you know, what is the point? I mean, my advice would be do not. I mean, move into a very
shabby,
you know, shabby house that doesn't need anything done and that you don't care about until maybe they're 18.
And they leave.
And they leave. Because literally, I mean, the unit, well, I mean, the dishwasher, the kitchen area mainly is having a hammering.
Really?
Ah. Ah. I mean, terrible. Terrible. The new seats are full of Weetabix.
And that sticks. It sticks so bad.
Weetabix is like cement. I'm going to ban.
You've got a house with that stuff.
Yep. I'm going to ban Weetabix. I mean, you know, very nutritious. And I liked it as a cereal before.
Yeah.
But now I'm not so much of a fan. It's in all my clothes. It's all over the flipping sofa. I mean, I can't even get it off Ted's face some mornings. And I just leave him. So we go out.
Oh, I usually get placed and I'm like, oh no. Oh, you've still got bits in between your eyebrows. It's terrible.
Yeah, I know. But they get it. I mean, and he's quite chubby, little Ted. So he gets Weetabix and everything in folds in his arms and in his legs, which is really nice.
Just find it at dinner time. Oh, that's a nice little bit of Weetabix there.
Yeah.
So at the end of every podcast, I ask you to finish a few sentences.
Okay.
There's nothing too tricky.
Okay.
Being a mum means?
I think being a mum is the biggest privilege out there. It's really, really hard at times, but I think it's a privilege to have one person or two people or three people who solely rely on you. You are the most important person, and it's only you and your partner that can comfort that little human more than any. It's only you that can put their world right when it's upside down, and that is a huge privilege. Makes me cry.
Oh, God.
Since having children, I am less selfish.
You can't be selfish when you're a mum.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
I'm less selfish, I'm more patient, and I'm a better version of myself. Not every day, but most days than I was before.
Oh. And I'm happy when?
I'm happy when we are in the kitchen, when all the toys are all over the floor, when there's Weetabix in my hair, and when Charlie and Teddy are there and it's a Saturday morning and we have a whole weekend together.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been
oh my God,
joy.
It's been a pleasure. I've absolutely loved it. I feel like it's a therapy session.
That's how I feel every time.
I feel lighter now, going forth with my day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.